Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. Tootsie the Coyote was Deadwood's unofficial mascot during the 1950s, and whether you know it or not, she's had a lasting impact on South Dakota. SDPB producer Brian Gevick is here with her story. He's joining us in the Sioux Falls studio today. Hey, Brian.
Hi.
All right, so how would anyone know about Tootsie?
You might know about Tootsie if you're from Deadwood, or if you were in Deadwood and you said, hey, why is that sign up there? Why does that have a coyote on it? There's a big neon sign in downtown Deadwood on Lee Street at Main, and it's up on one of the buildings, and it's this beautiful neon sign of a coyote howling at the moon. That's Tootsie.
I've seen the sign. I did not know it was Tootsie.
Well, you know, people would come to me, people that I work with and so on, and say, you've never heard of Tootsie? I say, well, no. Well, no, you need to find out, and you need to do a story about Tootsie. So I said, okay, I'll look into it.
Oh.
Did you hear that, folks? That's a picture of Tootsie the coyote as a little
pup. That's the sound you make when you see the picture of Tootsie the coyote. You go, aw.
Yeah.
Because she's kind of cute.
Well, you know, she did grow up. But I wanted to know more about I wanted to hear, you know, the story of Tootsie the coyote. So I contacted Deadwood History, Inc. and spoke with Carolyn Weber, their executive director.
Oh, Tootsie, it's a great story. Tootsie was a coyote that they found in 1947 that had been orphaned. A gentleman named Ollie Wiswell was out walking around near Custer Peak, which is about 7 miles south of Deadwood, and he stumbled across this little orphaned, tiny, tiny coyote pup, and he just couldn't, I guess, looked around for the parent, the mother, couldn't find her, and so then he took Tootsie. Now, at the time, there was a bounty on coyotes. So we're wondering if maybe Tootsie's mother didn't get killed by a hunter, or maybe had a car accident, you know, got hit by a car out on the road or something happened. So then there was Tootsie. So he took Tootsie home and decided he didn't want to keep her. So he gave her to some friends of his who are Fred and Esther Borsch.
And how did they take care of this formerly wild creature?
Well, since she was so tiny, she, you know, needed the care and attention of, mm-hmm. of a human. So she adapted quite well to those two, to Fred and Esther. She wasn't so friendly to other people sometimes, but she was friendly with them. And it was so great, in fact, that Fred found out not too long after she had gotten, a couple months older, that coyotes just love to howl. And I think a lot of people know that, but he wasn't aware of how much they do. And so he took advantage of that, and he started singing along with her howling. And soon she was picking up the different tones and things to his music. And lo and behold, when she was a little bit older, maybe like a year, they made a recording. In
really?
Deadwood, at as a recording studio that they had there in Deadwood. So she's cut a record, Tootsie has.
She went on to some other fame as well in town, didn't she?
She did. She appeared in all the Days of 76 parades from the time she was probably a year old, which would be like 1948 up until the mid-50s. She appeared in those parades, other parades and events around the area. And she got to gain a lot of popularity in the Black Hills and eventually throughout South Dakota. And then she became so popular within the state that Governor Mickelson decided to name the coyote as the state animal for South Dakota.
Yeah. That's how that started.
It is. It's all started with Tootsie. Yeah.
Yeah. And there's still some remnant of her legacy in Deadwood, right?
There is, thanks to Deadwood Historic Preservation and the funding from that. There was a sign that was created by the Borsches that featured Tootsie the coyote on there, and it was a large neon sign, and they owned the Spot Liquor Store,
mm-hmm.
and so they had Spot Liquor on the sign along with a silhouette of Tootsie, and It stood there for years, and then, of course, it became in quite disrepair. And so Deadwood Historic Preservation Funds repaired that, and so now it's back to what it originally was, mm-hmm. and it sits on top of the original location of the Spot Liquor Store on Lee and Main Streets in
Lee
Deadwood.
Lee and Main.
Mm-hmm.
You walk up that street, you're going to see it.
You are, yeah.
But, you know, you'll walk by it, and you go, oh, that's kind of neat. But it's interesting to know that there's a reason.
There's a story behind it.
Howling at the moon.
Yeah,
yeah.
All right. First, we have to do our due diligence and say, don't try this at home.
Oh, I was going to say, there is no wildlife manager on earth that would advise you to take in a wild animal.
Leave it there.
And your family physician wouldn't like it either.
I sort of like the idea that Tootsie was pretty nice to Fred and Esther, but not as nice to other people. So there's some stories there.
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt.
However, it's 1950s. It's a different time and a different coyote.
Yeah. But, to me, it's just, why are we the coyote state?
Right. That's fascinating.
Who knew? Yeah, that's neat.
And let's build a big neon sign after our pet.
Exactly. There are a lot of pictures of Tootsie, and one that's really interesting to me is she's standing outside of a cabin. It's obviously a hunter's cabin, and she's howling, and in front of her are all these booze bottles.
Oh.
Because she was the owner had a liquor store, so he used her in some advertising. And I should say that some of the pictures that we have come from Jeff Jacobson offline, and he's the great nephew of Fred Borsch, so we thank him for that.
All right, and you can find more at sdpb.org/images of the past is where you can find all the images of the past posts throughout the weeks. And it's one of those things where how many times do people come up to you and say, hey, Brian, you should do a story about fill in the blank?
It just reminds me of how much I don't know.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
Look around. When you go to a town, you look at it differently than I do. And then, people, you're looking for those signs of interesting things sort of hidden that have stories.
Yeah, definitely. And they're everywhere.
We've got a little twofer for images of the past. We're going to talk about collectors and collections of historical images and how people share their stuff and their stories.
Right. The reason that we're doing this is that this is the topic of the next Images of the Past TV documentary about collectors and collections. And I'm thinking about entitling it The Accumulators.
Nice.
But there are.
See, I've done an awe and a woohoo in this one segment, all because of you. Good stuff.
There are these various Facebook groups, and they all have just amazing photos.
Yeah.
And so I wanted to find out, who puts these things together? Where do these all come from? And I contacted a gentleman named David Franson, who's from the Aberdeen area. Now, he had inherited a lot of historical photographs that had been collected by an uncle who'd passed away. So Dave was working with all these family photographs, but he realized that he had some unique images that would be of interest to anyone.
Included in some of that were photographs that I quickly decided had more of a statewide history interest rather than just a family history interest. And I wasn't sure, I hated to just put them back in the box and put them on a shelf. I knew that they would be of interest to somebody. And so what I did was I set up a Facebook page, a Facebook group, without any particular goals in mind, other than just to keep those particular photographs for now until I decided what we needed to do with them. And I started that group with a half a dozen photographs from the Black Hills area that my grandparents took on their honeymoon in 1930. In the last 15 months, that Facebook group, it's been going for about 3.5, going on 4 years, but the membership was quite low for much of that time. In the last 15 months, it's grown from 400 to 19,000. And so there is a big interest in South Dakota history.
I'm sure that people are going to want to know how you managed to curate all that. How do you have time to go through all that? Because there are so many submissions with it. I mean, in other words, it's taken on kind of a life of its own. Maybe this is something that you got running, but now people are it really is a group where people are, with themselves, and you're in the background somewhere.
Yes, absolutely. It doesn't take much work. It manages itself just because it's made up of people who have such an intense history interest and local history.
Why do you feel it's important to have these historical images preserved and put in front of people and to some extent talked about?
I surprised myself in how much I didn't know. There was too much history that didn't follow us forward as the calendar is marching on. And I felt like both for family history and South Dakota history, it was important to preserve that and bring the awareness of it along with us as we progress through time, whether it's a century at a time or a decade at a time. There's things about our past that we need to know, and it's not always pleasant. We have to know how we got here in order to know where we as a society and even our individual families are going from here. We have to know where we've been. We have to know the road that we traveled to get here.
Now, you talked about some of the unpleasantness in this, and I suppose that has something to do with the moderating that you have to do. If someone posts a controversial image, for example, and there's a difference of opinion on the actual history portrayed.
We've had some discussions that turn a little contentious, not many, but one of them would be, as an example, would be the massacre at Wounded Knee, and I believe it was 1890. And myself and the other moderator on that South Dakota History Facebook group, we decided early on that we don't want to be a place to battle these issues out. It's better if we be the discussion group that retains this information. And what we wanted to make sure happened is that, using Wounded Knee as an example, that people know about it, and our young people know about it, and they need to take it forward. But it doesn't serve our purpose. It doesn't do us any good to have battles over that particular issue or others like it. And sometimes it's a challenge to avoid that because it is a hot topic. It's a sensitive topic, and there's people here today in South Dakota who have vivid memories of their ancestors who were involved in it, and maybe on both sides. But with that in mind, we want to just make sure that there's an awareness of those kinds of things. And using Wounded Knee as an example, just the fact that it happened, to make sure that kids growing up today know that it happened, to the degree that you can explain how it unfolded, why did it happen. Of course, everybody agrees it was bad, it was sad, it was unnecessary, and that's probably being nice about it. But then from there forward, and where do we go with that today? We can't fix it, but we can learn from it.
So I looked on this website, or this Facebook. Mm-hmm. What is it called, if people want to find it?
It's called the South Dakota History of Cities, Towns, Places, and People Who Made It Great.
If you want to be part of the 19,000 people who are following that. And I found one that just had a picture of some children, and somebody was commenting about their socks and how they used to have to wear these stockings, and then you graduated to knee socks, and finally, so it's anklets, and it was just this very personal memory of being a kid and wearing a different kind of sock.
Yeah,
you never know what's going to come up in those memories. So tell us more about the documentary and what you're looking for.
Sure. Well, there are, I guess I have probably four groups like this in my listing of groups. And I am going to be contacting some of the contributors, if I can, and some of the moderators, certainly. There's one in the Black Hills, and you know who you are. I'll be reaching out to you fairly soon. Basically, with the idea of, okay, let's look at these photos, and let's find some pictures with complete stories. Yeah. And David Franzen, who we just heard from, had a story about a round barn. It's a barn that was in his family, but he can tell you when it was built, who built it, how long it was in service, where it is, the dimensions of the round barn and the whole thing, and pictures that begin with while it was being built to now while it sits out there in Potter County just sort of slowly fading away. And so those are the kinds of things where, you know, you're online, you're on Facebook, and you can get a total history of something that maybe is a landmark in your community or in your area, but nobody really knows. So this appears to me to be one option for people to really, you know, form a group, share some community stories, and learn more about their own history.
Do you worry at all about this sense of it just being, you know, this big social media, you know, dumping ground that maybe people forget to go further and do a little more of the work that comes from, you know, archiving and saving and preserving and collecting those stories? There's somewhat of a release that, you know, oh, I put it out there on Facebook, but the work might not be done.
No, I don't worry about the fact that it's there. I worry about the fact that it's only there for Facebook users.
Right.
The fact that, you know, not everybody wants to be on Facebook. Mm-hmm. So what's next after Facebook? So you've got, you know, a lot of people involved in social media who are involved in these groups, but there are other people who are interested. And the question is, how do they get to them? And I think it's got to be a question of, you know, what kinds of media do you care about? What kinds of interactions do you have? Maybe you go to your local museum or county historical society.
Maybe you watch the next Images of the Past documentary.
Oh, there's that.
As South Dakota Public Broadcasting puts these things together for you. Brian Gevick, thanks so much for being here.
Thanks, Lori.